Coming to you from the home of the Frango Mint, it's the Medicare for the Lazy Man podcast. The Medicare podcast that votes in every election. Once again, Medicare experts agree he is Medicare expert Doug Jones.
Hey, hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Medicare for the Lazy Man podcast. It's a beautiful sunny morning here in Illinois, and you just heard my Canadian nephew, Drew McMillan, announce our arrival. And he probably told you who I am, too. I don't know exactly what he said, but he probably told you that I'm your Medicare expert. And that's what I'm going to do today. It's a tough time of life when you have to cross from Obamacare into Medicare. It's confusing. It's scary. Sometimes it's confusing. Oh, did I say that? I'm confused now. So anyway, we're here to help you understand that it doesn't have to be a scary, confusing time, and it can be a beneficial time. Often people entering into Medicare find that they get coverage as good or better than they had with an employer's plan or with their privately held plan for less monetary outlay. And so my goal in life is to help people understand, A, that Medicare shouldn't be scary, B, that it's probably going to be more cost-effective coverage over the long haul, and C, here are a few things you need to know and just a couple of things you need to decide on. Then I help the paperwork along, and before you know it, bang, you're in Medicare, and you will have been not inconvenienced whatsoever. But anyway, all of this is predicated on my book that I started writing a few years ago. I write a new one every year called Medicare for the Lazy Man, Simplest and Easiest Guide Ever. And you can buy that book at Amazon.com, or you can buy it at BarnesandNoble.com. It comes in paperback. It comes in Kindle version. It comes in Audible version, in case you'd like to fall asleep listening to people talk to you about Medicare. That generally puts people to sleep. Anyway, we often describe the goal of this podcast in very succinct terms by the use of our 30-second radio spot. And Randy Carson has prepared that spot for our listening pleasure. So let's listen to it now. Medicare is complicated. Medicare can be confusing. Medicare is no fun to study. Will you know what decisions to make when Medicare time arrives for you? My name is Doug Jones, and I wrote a book to help you figure it all out. Medicare for the Lazy Man. It's on sale at Amazon and BarnesandNoble.com. Also, you can download and listen to my podcast, Medicare for the Lazy Man, wherever fine podcasts are given away free of charge. Medicare for the Lazy Man, simplest and easiest guide ever. Thank you, Randy, for playing that spot. And Randy Carson is, of course, pushing buttons and spinning dials and sliding slides. On the other side of the screen, he's engineering this magnificent thing that we call the Medicare for the Lazy Man podcast. Good afternoon, Randy. How are things going for you?
It's good. It's good. I just have to mention, Doug, that now that you've got your big boy mic hooked in, you sound just like Lyle Wagner. You remember him?
Well, yeah, I sure do. But do I sound like he sounds now? Because he's dead.
I didn't know that Lyle had gone to the last radio show.
Yeah. Yeah, he's he's podcasting or broadcasting from somewhere in the ether. Yeah, of course, I have an Ethernet cord I could use, but No, Lyle has departed the stage a long time ago, but absolutely a great guy, very funny on the Carol Burnett show. I've taken to watching the Twilight Zone lately, especially the older half hour episodes.
I remember
most of them, and some of them are pretty cheesy and some of them aren't, but basically I found myself going to bed in the middle of every Twilight Zone episode or at the beginning, the spousal unit snoring away, sawing logs with the TV on. And I just happened to hit the rack at the same time as the Twilight Zone first started at 11:30 at night, I think. So, what I finally did was I can't stand falling asleep in the middle of the episode and not knowing how it ended.
Right.
Because some of them were better than others. And I got, you know, how did that one end? And so what I started doing is TiVoing the Twilight Zone episodes every night. So I've got to stack up them on my TiVo, but at least it doesn't bother me so much because I can go find that episode and watch the very ending if I don't remember it. And so that part worked out pretty well. But then certain things bothered me. One was an episode I just saw recently that actually starred Carol Burnett before anybody knew who she was.
Really?
Yeah. And she was like a goofball comedian in a department store. She was dressed up like I Dream of Jeannie, only not quite as enticing. And she was supposed to be in charge of customer service or something, and she couldn't answer anything anybody asked. So it was comedic and interesting. But I think back when I was a kid and I watched her, I had no idea that she was going to become a staple of comedic television.
You know, the Twilight Zone, there's one episode, and I'll see if you remember it. There was one episode on the Twilight Zone when I was a kid that really became memorable to the point that it really kind of put the fear of God in me. There was an episode where there was a portal opened up in somebody's wall, and there was a little girl sitting on the floor.
Yes.
And she reached through it.
Yes, that was just on a couple of weeks ago. And I remembered that episode and I knew how it ended, but I was fascinated and I found myself watching it anyway. And it was pretty interesting.
How did it end? I don't remember.
I hate to wreck it for you, but you're not TiVoing the Twilight Zone right now.
No.
So what happened was for some reason they called a neighbor who was a rocket scientist, and the guy came over, and I remember the house as being very ultra modern. And so that was part of the appeal for me because I like seeing what things were like back in the olden days. And so they had a lot of like Danish modern furniture and stuff like that. And so anyway, they called their neighbor. The neighbor came over in his PJs and a Burberry trench coat.
So that's so normal.
What happened was the girl had dropped a toy under her bed. So she crawled under her bed and she winds up in this other dimension. And so when she's crying, they can hear her kind of echoey cry.
Oh, yes. I forgot that part.
And so they're feeling around to see where she might have entered the other thing. And this guy winds up moving her bed out of the way and taking chalk and drawing a big opening on the wall in her bedroom. And they can stick their hand into the other dimension. And so the father kind of crawled into the other dimension, found the girl, and the dog came running out. Her little dog was after her, and he went into the other dimension to find her. He came running out. So the father grabbed her, and the neighbor yanked him out with the girl in his arms. And then he said, "Oh boy, that was just in time." "Oh yeah, why was that?" Well, then he has him hit the inside of the circle where he had drawn the lines around the opening. He said it was closing up the whole time you were in there. You almost found yourself half in our dimension and half in the other dimension.
Oh, wow.
So now this guy has a house that he's got to be scared to live in because, you know, portals into another dimension are going to be opening up.
And then, of course, one of the questions when you list your house, as you know, have you ever had any water damage? No.
Well, now they have to ask about other dimensions. Have you ever lost your kid?
Has your kid ever fallen into another dimension in her bedroom? No.
Yeah, that was just wacky. He and the wife are sleeping in the middle of the night and the kid's crying. No, I'll go get her a drink of water. And she's in another dimension.
Oh, my gosh. So I got to ask you, when you go into the Medicare world, is that like another dimension?
Well, it certainly is. And it can be a happier dimension because a lot of employer plans, especially large companies, you know, it's become so expensive to have health insurance in this age of Obamacare that they reduce the cost by imposing a huge deductible on people. In many cases, and especially in individual health insurance, if you're self-employed, you want to buy a plan, say, from Blue Cross, Blue Shield, you'll have to, in order to get a reasonably priced plan, you're going to have to say, I will accept a $5,000 annual deductible or a $6,000 or $7,000 annual deductible. And even at that point, your premium is likely to be $600, $700, $800, maybe $1,000 a month, depending on your age and where you live. So, yes, I'm going to say that if you have Obamacare, you will wish that you were in the other dimension of Medicare, because that's where things are bright and rosy and the flowers grow and you romp around all day long.
Are there bunnies? Bunnies
there
are, and little
there
ducks?
Bunnies. They're bunnies. Okay. And if you want to, you and your girl, your best gal, as they used to say, can spread out a blanket and get your picnic basket out and start eating goodies that she's fixed for you.
Oh, my. That sounds so good. But to your previous point there, Doug, anybody that's in small business, buying insurance, if you're a small business person, is nearly impossible. And I remember obviously I'm on Medicare now, which I really enjoy. There's bunnies and there's little ducks and chickens. Yeah. So I like it. But before that, we were paying, I don't know, somewhere pretty close to $1,000, maybe more a month. And if I remember correctly, our deductible was somewhere around $10,000.
That is what most American people are burdened with. Even if you work for a large company, got a lot of cash, they can't afford to provide the rich benefits that we used to have when we were young. Back when you worked for the bank, I'll bet you your deductible was somewhere in the neighborhood of between $100 and $250 a year.
Yeah, exactly.
And after that, you probably had to pay 20% of any medical costs until you had maybe spent $1,000 out of your own pocket, or maybe $1,500. And after that, they would pay 100% for the rest of the year, no matter how much it was. And that's the way things were back in the 70s and 80s. And then along came managed care, and it kind of snuck in. This is why I tell people, you have to be afraid of incremental changes, because these things will become a way of life if you don't call a halt to them. Managed care came in, not as HMOs with a lot of rules and restrictions, but as PPOs. Now, a PPO is a preferred provider organization, and I was first introduced in 1987 to the John Hancock. They had a PPO network in Chicago, and they said, look, this was a different part of the company. So they said, we want you to come work for us and sell group insurance to employer groups with our new PPO product. Now, it was limited in that it did not have every doctor in Chicago. You could not go to any doctor. They had a book with a list of all the doctors and hospitals you could use. And if you used any other doctors or hospitals, you had to pay more out of your pocket than if you used the doctors and hospitals in the list. But guess what? This was the early stages, and they had to compete with very rich employee benefit plans. So if you went to any of the doctors or the hospitals in the book that they handed out in the network that John Hancock established, didn't have to pay anything. It was 100% coverage, unlimited, and it was a really nice deal. That was the reward you got to entice you to use that network. Now, let's suppose that you happen to have a doctor that was not in the network and you wanted to go for your medical needs to somebody you've been going to forever and ever, and that doctor wasn't in the network. Well, then the punishment was you had to pay 20% of the first, $500 in medical expenses. Yeah.
Really?
That was the club. I mean, And the carrot was they would pay 100% of any kind of medical treatment you had if you went to the doctors in the network. And the club was that you had to pay like $200 or $300 out of your own pocket if you chose not to use the doctors in the network. So that was 1987, 34 years ago. And it has changed now to the nightmare scenario we have today. Why did it do that? Because of increasing medical inflation and because of a political climate in which one party decided to try to purchase votes of people by saying, we're going to give you everything you've ever wanted free of charge. And this not only was successful in purchasing votes for that particular party, they're still at it today. They're saying things like, it's so important for seniors. Boy, I hate that word. So important for people to have good teeth. Well, I couldn't agree more. But should the United States government pay for it? Should taxpayers have to support dental coverage for everyone. There are some people who don't need or want dental coverage, but that doesn't matter because just like Obamacare, the federal government is being asked to cram down the throats of everyone the cost of dental coverage. And then what's going to happen? It's going to be inferior coverage. I just read an article today. Well, I tried to read the article. When I do research and I run across something I think is interesting, half the time it's a magazine dangling an interesting headline out there in the first paragraph of an article, and then it goes away and it tells me I've got to subscribe to the magazine. So this article was in Barron's, and I think it was a very new article about the pressures on one political party to provide unlimited or at least benefit-rich dental and vision and hearing coverage for the Medicare recipients. And they call them beneficiaries, but I say that sounds like welfare, so let's call them recipients. My clients have the choice of getting that, and I tell them, look, I have dental, vision, and hearing coverage available to you. So nobody's going to keep that coverage and that protection away from people. It's a matter of who pays. And they don't tell people the truth about it. The coverage is readily available. It's guaranteed issue. It's not cheap, but it allows you, the coverage I offer, it allows you to go to any dentist that you want to go to. And you can get a itemized bill from that dentist and then get a little simple claim form from your dental policy that I would sell you. And then you send in your itemized bill and they'll send you a check. If you happen to wind up at the dentist in one of their, one of the dentists in their networks, then they will do that paperwork filing for you. But either way, you can have dental, vision, and hearing coverage without the federal government paying for it, without the economy taking another giant hit in the shorts, and without more government intrusion into our lives. It's bad enough that we can't go back to the days of 1987 and get 100% coverage or maybe a small deductible and 80-20 of $500 or 80-20 of $1,000. That would be ideal, but given the number of lawyers, the number of vote-buying political parties, and the number of insurance companies that are now addicted to Medicare Advantage plans, where the government shovels money into their coffers and they turn around and hire people like Joe Namath to explain how everybody should get a ride on the bus to the doctor's office. I'm afraid we've gone too far to go back. So what I'm doing is praying for a meteorite to come down and strike Washington, D.C., and maybe we can start over again and go through those beautiful years from the 1950s, those post-war years where everything was wonderful and there were flowers and bunnies and it was all a beautiful thing. Of course, we had other problems back then. But anyway, I think I've been actually looking at my watch. I took my watch off for the first time ever, and I said to myself, I bet I could look at this and tell when 20 minutes has passed. And the reason I'm motivated to do that is because I have the spousal unit every day give me a grade. I make her listen to one episode, and we've had some episodes that went for like almost 40 minutes. Oh boy, those don't get high grades from the spousal unit, especially when she's waiting to watch her stories on TV, and I interrupt that process. I will probably take a little time here to share an interesting letter I got from a client of mine. She's a fairly new client. Fairly new clients are in Medicare. They realize how inexpensive it is, and they're always so happy. And then somehow they eventually, we lose our close-knit relationship. But she came up with a question. Now, I sold her a very, very aggressively priced Medicare high value plan, which cost her just pennies per day. And she said, I have not yet received my policy, which is fine. I expect it may take a week or two. And that's exactly right. She said, however, I need to contact them or let you know that for some reason, the initial premium was drafted on September 23rd from my bank account. But the paperwork I sent in requested that that be done on the 5th of the month. I was thinking October 5th would be the time the first payment would be made, since coverage starts on October 1st. My concern is not that payment was made prematurely, but what can I expect going forward without having to closely monitor this? I'm glad I can at least ask you where to turn at this point. How would you advise? Thank you for your help. So I responded immediately. I said, do not worry about this. I failed to explain this to you, and I apologize for that oversight. The first premium drawn by this company, drawn from your checking account, is always drawn immediately when they approve of the application. This is because their lawyers have laid down the law about a contract, a valid contract, containing three elements, and that would be an offer, an acceptance of the offer, and an exchange of valuable consideration. So the offer is the insurance company offering to cover the proposed insured. The acceptance of the offer, I may have this backwards, the acceptance of the offer is typically the insured submitting an application and then having that application be accepted by the company. The third element of a contract is the exchange of valuable consideration, and that would be the withdrawal of the first premium from the insurer's bank account. And they do that on the day the application is accepted, no matter when the effective date of the coverage is. So all future premiums will be withdrawn on the business day as close as possible to your requested date. Also, I believe you can make a change with a phone call to customer service. And then I gave her the customer service number. So then she said, okay, it's a good thing you know all the ins and outs, and therefore I won't worry about it. Thank you for letting me know. I'm sure it'll be fine going forward. Thank you for the customer service number too, if I ever need it. And then she said, I've been listening to the podcasts and I have some real laughs at times, and not about Medicare, because we all know Medicare is not that funny. She said, I can relate to the conversations you and Randy have on those podcasts. I guess it won't be too long and you'll be back in Arizona. Oh, boy. Did I tell you that she and her husband, were stationed in Yuma, not once, but twice? I used to know the Phoenix Airport like the back of my hand. And then she goes on to tell me a little bit about her personal life and how it was cheaper to drive 3 hours from Yuma to Phoenix to fly to visit her family than it was to fly from Yuma. Apparently that was a lot more expensive. And so I wanted to take this opportunity of her writing in with that question to remind people that if you decide to accept the really, really reasonably priced high value Medicare supplement that I'm going to suggest to almost everybody, and if you take the bank draft option for payment of the premium, which is what I suggest to almost everybody, and I'll explain that to new clients, then you're going to have your first premium drawn when the policy is, or when the application is approved, not on the first day of the month of your initial coverage date. So that's the only time. Otherwise, when you tell them you want to have your premium drawn on the 13th of the month, they're going to do it on the 13th of the month or as close as possible every month, as long as you have that policy, which should be maybe forever and ever and ever. So that was what I brought to the table for content today. Sometimes that premium draft is not something we can control, and other times it is. So now that my watch is telling me I've been yakking for 25 minutes, I think we could probably bring that train into the station. What do you think?
I think so. We're slowing down. We're coming into the station. And, you know, you remember back in the day, you'd see all the smoke and steam coming from the sides. And, you know,
Oh, yeah.
You love that stuff. Yeah. And that's exactly what's happening right now, because we are coming into the station here. But before we do, you know, let you out on the, you know, right before we get there, let's say thank you for joining us. Thank you very much for listening. We enjoy having every one of you, and we want to have you all come and listen to us again. Go to Amazon, get your books. Go to Barnes & Noble, get your books. Go to Amazon, get your audio. Go to Amazon, get all of that stuff, because you'll never regret it. And You have just spent about 32 and a half minutes, as you know, listening to Doug Jones, the anti-insurance insurance guy from Oklahoma. And let's see, what are we going to do today? Doug is now also the chief financial officer of Medicare for the LazyMan.com.
I'm so busy.
You are. So I'm going to put a cliffhanger. We haven't had a cliffhanger out there for quite a while. I am going to put a cliffhanger out there before we sign off. And the cliffhanger is, where in the United States was the location of the last, in the Army, the last cavalry regiment in the United States Army? Where was the city that that was located? And
really?
We'll answer that next time.
Cool.
It's really a good one. And keep that in mind. You might even want to write that down on a piece of paper by your computer. So it's really that good.
Oh, boy. Well, I can't wait to find out, but he's not going to tell me, ladies and gentlemen. You're going to find out probably before I do, or at least at the same time that I do. But once again, thank you for joining us, and we'll look forward to talking to you again real soon.